Kentucky officials are stressing the importance of easy access to voter registration. Recently, the Commonwealth launched GoVoteKentucky.com in an attempt to do just that. Secretary of State Allison Lundergan Grimes is optimistic about the new online system.
We are above the national average in terms of folks being registered to vote. However, there are still one-third of voting age eligible Kentuckians that aren't yet registered. That was the reason and the momentum behind trying to make the registration process easier and accessible.
On this week's Eastern Standard, efforts to increase voter turnout and Kentucky's role in this year's presidential election. We're interested in your questions, comments, or personal stories. Write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Post a comment to the Facebook page or send a tweet at WEKUEST. In just a little bit, we'll open the phones as well. It's time for Eastern Standard, right after the latest news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. Well, Kentucky's primary election is almost upon us, and Secretary of State Allison Lundergan Grimes has finished Kentucky's GoVoteKentucky.com tour in the capital city this week. On this week's Eastern Standard, we are talking with Secretary Grimes about her efforts and the latest attempt or effort to encourage people to get registered before the primary. That effort is now concluded, but we'll hear about it anyway. And we also want to hear what's keeping people from voting, how we can encourage you and other voters, if not our public radio listeners. Our public radio listeners are already active voters and active citizens. But how can we encourage voter participation in the Commonwealth of Kentucky? That's one of the questions we'll raise during today's conversation. We have a number of guests who are joining us in the studio. And we're going to meet them in a little bit more detail in just a few moments, but I will very briefly tell you that we have on the phone line Emily Beaulieu, Associate Professor in Comparative Politics in the Department of Political Science at the University of Kentucky. Emily, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, John.
Joining us by Skype is Ben Knoll, Assistant Professor of Politics at Center College, research focusing on public opinion and voting behavior of the American public, and has been a guest before on Eastern Standard. Ben, thanks again for being with us today.
Absolutely.
And in the studio with us is Darren Wilson, and Darren is an associate professor. Am I correct? They're getting us the right?
Assistant professor.
Assistant professor in the Department of Government at Eastern Kentucky University. Darren, thanks for being with us.
Happy to be here.
We'll get back with our guests in just a few moments, but first up, we want to introduce to you, actually you may already know, Secretary of State Allison Lundergan Grimes. Secretary Grimes has been involved in an effort called GoVoteKentucky.com, and earlier this week, I had an opportunity to speak with her about the accomplishments and the efforts that have been made to encourage voter participation in the Commonwealth.
Well, Kentucky made history this year, John, becoming the 31st state in the nation to offer online voter registration. Our online system, GoVoteKentucky.com, it's the one-stop shop for all things as it relates to Kentucky's elections. And importantly, people have to register here in Kentucky before they can show up at the polls on election day. The deadline to register to vote for the upcoming primary in May was this past Monday, the 18th. And in contrast to years past, where we were relegated to submission of the paper forms, we have taken the paper out of the process for those that want to, encouraging people all the way up to midnight on April 18th to get their voter registration updated or register for the first time online, GoVoteKentucky.com. And what we have seen, I traveled the Commonwealth in a statewide GoVote tour, and it was the largest voter registration drive effort in the Commonwealth in over a decade. And the response, overwhelming, energy, excitement, palpable. 22,000 Kentuckians, more than that, actually used the portal before Monday's deadline to register to vote or update their registration. And we are hopeful that folks will continue to utilize this resource leading all the way up to the primary. And indeed, if by chance folks didn't register by the deadline, they can still use the portal to register in preparation for the upcoming general election, which will occur on November 8th.
So the portal remains open. Now, of the 22,000 that use the portal, prior to the deadline. How many of them are brand new voters? How many are added to the voter polls or to the rolls as a result of this online service?
Well, the majority of folks were updating their registration, but we did see several thousand new registrations that were added to the rolls. And we are right now going to be crunching the numbers because obviously we're still processing the paper forms that were submitted with the postage mark stamp of Monday the 18th. But as of yesterday morning, nearly 6,000 new registrants using our system. That's exciting news. Many of them that are going to be casting their first vote this presidential election year. They're just turning 18. Over 1,500 18-year-olds registered for the first time. But this wasn't a system that was relegated just to the young at heart. Kentuckians 98 years young were using the system, John, because they realized there are no lines when you go online. And importantly, as a 98-year-old told me, Allison, I was able to update my registration with ease and speed. And so we want to encourage everybody, utilize GoVoteKentucky.com. It contains key information relating to our elections. You can actually review your registration or register for the first time if you need to and get directions to your polling location sent directly to your mobile device.
So let's talk about the May 17th primary and the November 8th general election. Who is eligible to vote in either of those elections? Of course, the May 17th is a Democratic primary. In Kentucky, must you be declared, registered as a Democrat in order to vote in that primary?
Here in Kentucky, we have what's known as closed primaries, joining about a dozen other states around the U.S. Who likewise have closed primaries. You have to be registered with a certain party affiliation to be able to vote, for instance, in the Democratic primary or the Republican primary in partisan races. There are several counties, though, that do have nonpartisan races that are up, a Supreme Court race that is up across the Commonwealth. We want to make sure people realize here in Kentucky, unfortunately, you have to have your registration declared if you're a current registered voter by the end of last year. So if you updated your registration after December 31st of 2015 and perhaps change your party affiliation, Republican to Democrat or Democrat Republican, or perhaps became, you know, from an independent to be a Democrat or Republican. Unfortunately, because of the current law, you will not be able to vote in the partisan races because you updated your registration after December of last year.
When it comes down to the Republican contest, the Republican side of it is finished in Kentucky, at least as far as the caucus process. Who's on the ballot, on the Democratic ballot? We certainly know that Secretary Clinton and Senator Sanders will be on the ballot. Are there other candidates that Democrats will see on the ballot?
There are federal races on the ballot, obviously, for U.S. president. We have several individuals who have qualified and put their name on the ballot here in Kentucky. Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Martin O'Malley, although he has withdrawn, and several other individuals as well as uncommitted. And there is a U.S. Senate race that is up across Kentucky for folks to be looking at, as well as U.S. representative races. So several federal races as well as state-specific races. State Senate, all of our odd districts across Kentucky are up, as well as every state House of Representatives is on the ballot.
What is the status of voter registration across the board in the Commonwealth right now? How many people are actually registered to vote? And do you have any predictions, even though we're a month away, for turnout?
Right now, here in the Commonwealth, we are above the national average in terms of folks being registered to vote. However, there are still one-third of voting-age eligible Kentuckians that aren't yet registered. That was the reason and the momentum behind trying to make the registration process easier and accessible, bringing it online so that we could reach the demographic, the one-third of voting age eligible Kentuckians that haven't taken the time to previously register when paper was the only form or process. And when you look specifically, John, at the numbers, they get more dire when you look at minorities and youth in terms of the one-third of Kentuckians that aren't yet registered but are eligible. My hope is that when we are able to publicize the final voter registration numbers, which we will likely be able to do next week, we will see not only that we conducted the state's largest voter registration drive effort in the past decade, but importantly, some strong growth across the board for folks registering here in the Commonwealth. And in terms of turnout, right now there is absentee ballot voting going on. People are able to vote via absentee ballot by mail right now, and 12 days in advance of the election on May 17th, in-person absentee voting will open. You have to have, unfortunately, an excuse to vote early here in Kentucky. That's something I hope we can change in the years to come. We've made the registration process easier. Now we need to make the voting process easier. And early voting is something that 37 other states are already doing and seeing great impact and positive impact on their participation. Kentucky needs it here if we are going to have a fighting chance of making sure the 70% of Kentuckians that stayed home last November actually turn out and show up and vote on Election Day.
For those who may be concerned and they figured that they were already registered and did not go through any process prior to the deadline earlier this week, how do you know for sure that you are registered to vote in the May 17th primary? Can you do that via the new system, the GoVoteKentucky.com?
GoVoteKentucky.com is the answer, John. It contains all resources necessary for our voters. They can actually go in, input their name and birth date, pull up their voter registration where they can check to make sure that their registration is accurate. If they need to update it, they can likewise do that at GoVoteKentucky.com. But importantly, they can get specific information regarding their precinct location, where they go vote, detailed directions as how to get there, and importantly, see sample ballots, who's going to be on the ballot. And if they want to do a little bit of research, they can actually go back and look at candidate filing papers. It's all located GoVoteKentucky.com. It's what I hope will be rolling off of every media person's tongue as well as the voter's tongue throughout the Commonwealth. We have 3.2 million registered voters here in this state. We want every one of them utilizing and going on to see the resources available at GoVoteKentucky.com.
And even though a voter may say, well, you know, that's a Democratic Secretary of State's website, this is not a partisan site. This is information that is for everyone.
It sure is. And listen, as Secretary of State, you take that partisanship hat off. It's the reason why my colleague, Trey Hargett, Republican Secretary of State from Tennessee, came up here to help me push for early voting. At the end of the day, we want to see everybody participating, regardless of their affiliation, because that's what democracy is all about. We want to make sure that the majority of folks are determining who's going to operate things locally, who they're going to send here to Frankfort, who they're going to send to Washington, D.C. And you can't do that when just a minority of folks show up. 30% turnout in our general election last year, 2015, that helped elect our statewide constitutional officers. We can do better than that. And we have worked to make the registration process easier. Now it's my hope that Kentuckians, if they really want to have early voting without an excuse, if 37 other states already do, that they will have their voices heard. And importantly, let their county clerks association know that to stop standing in the way. This is something that Kentuckians want and deserve and have been demanding as I have traveled around the Commonwealth and had firsthand conversations with them about.
We'll hear a little more from Secretary of State Allison Lundergan Grimes on this week's Eastern Standard. We're talking about voter participation in the Commonwealth of Kentucky during this very important election cycle. We're interested in hearing from you. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Visit the Facebook page or the WEKU website, or give us a call right now, 800-621-8890. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. It is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, the program live on Thursday morning and repeated on Sunday evenings, and of course available as a podcast from the website at weku.fm. I'm John Hingsbergen, and we'll hear a little bit more from Secretary of State Allison Lundergan Grimes in just a few moments. We also have with us for today's program Emily Beaulieu, Associate Professor in Comparative Politics at the University of Kentucky. We have Ben Knoll, Assistant Professor of Politics at Center College. He's on Skype today, and also in the studio, Darren Wilson, Assistant Professor in the Department of Government at Eastern Kentucky University. A little bit of news, something we just saw on this Thursday morning. Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton has hired a veteran of Allison Lundgren Grimes' 2014 Senate run to lead her Kentucky campaign ahead of next month's presidential primary. The Clinton campaign has hired Elizabeth Cantrell Brooks as their state director ahead of the May 17th Kentucky primary. Brooks worked for Grimes' unsuccessful Senate campaign and was the campaign manager for State Representative Lou Nichols' successful special election for the House of Representatives last month. So a little bit of breaking news on this morning's program. Any of our panel, you all familiar with Elizabeth Cantrell Brooks?
I'm not necessarily familiar with her, but I am familiar with Christian Motley, who was also mentioned as a potential staff member. A very young, sharp man, great talent in politics. Actually went to Berea College, so spent time here in Madison County, and I think he definitely will be a great asset to the Clinton campaign.
All right, let me turn to all of you, our guests, regarding this issue of voter participation, and talk about how Kentucky compares to the rest of the country. Secretary of State Grimes speaks, of course, of very highly of the voters of Kentucky, and is touting success in increasing or updating voter registrations. What is your perception? Let's start with Emily Beaulieu in terms of Kentucky voter participation. Are you happy with the level of participation we've had from the voters in the Commonwealth?
Well, I think the participation here is fairly typical of what we see across the states. I find the registration drive interesting for the issue that both you and she mentioned, of allowing a number of voters to renew their registration, because in fact, what we've come to learn in recent waves of the American National Election Study and some of the research that's been done to really pinpoint who is voting and who's not, is that it's very often individuals who are more mobile. And so that's likely to be some of those more underrepresented groups of individuals who struggle to maintain registration. And so ultimately, it's the mobility associated with the stage of life that they find themselves in that causes real problems for them. So the notion of access that allows for updating a voter registration, I think, is actually really critically important for maintaining participation from those individuals who maybe it's not going to be a first-time situation, but who are likely to drop out from election to election because they moved and simply don't know how to get themselves registered.
So the ability to make that update, as well as to check and find out, am I registered?
Yeah.
And I know the general presumption is if you voted in the most previous election, you're registered, you're good to go. But I could imagine, personally, even myself, thinking the day before the election, am I correctly registered? How can I check on that?
So, honestly, John, we just moved, and I'm sitting here thinking, gosh, I got to find out where I go vote now.
Well, if you haven't registered before April 18th. No, I'm hoping that you are in the system.
We'll have to see.
Ben Knoll, you're you focus on public opinion and voting behavior. How do you think the voters in Kentucky are behaving in terms of participation in the elections?
No, I agree with everything that Emily said there. In 2012, Kentucky had about 56% of its voter eligible population turn out to vote, which isn't that much lower than about the 58.5% from the United States as a whole. So yeah, we're completely typical. One thing I can add to this conversation regarding registration is that itself is something which results often in a lower level of turnout than we see in other countries. The United States is unique in the sense that we're required to register many, many days before an election. Well, not necessarily unique, but amongst other industrialized democracies, many other countries automatically register you, and voter turnout is higher in those places. By having to have people register several weeks in advance, that's something that does result in lower voter turnout.
Why would we not do that? Why would we not just plain register all eligible citizens, or, you know, by the showing of a driver's license or some other ID, or some, you know, be able to prove who you are, allow you to walk in totally, unannounced on election day?
Mm-hmm. So some states are experimenting with this, trying election day registration, and that's actually been successful. In the states where this is done, research has shown that turnout tends to be boosted by a couple of percentage points. It doesn't fix the problem altogether, but it boosts it anywhere from 3 to 6% on average. The difficulty is that there's a lot of paperwork that goes into voter registration and keeping track of votes to maintain the integrity of the voting process. And so it's easier for governments to do if there's a deadline. It puts more of a burden administratively on them to not have it. But at the same time, we do see that that tends to decrease the amount of voting at the same time.
One of the issues is that we leave these kinds of decisions up to the states. And so, as Ben mentioned, there are, you know, California has now decided to go to an automatic voter registration system, and it's really seen as being at the vanguard of this kind of law in the states. But there's a lot about our elections that is just simply not mandated at the federal level. So it really is a state-by-state decision how it's going to operate.
Was it the former Speaker of the House, Tip O'Neill, who was quoted, given the credit for the quote that all politics are local? One of the reasons I invited Darren Wilson to join us is something that is very local in our listening area. And Darren, again, with the Department of Government at Eastern Kentucky University, Darren approached WEKU just a few weeks ago about participating in the Richmond City Commission debate that's going to be held next week. And I go, that's not of interest to a lot of our listeners across the region. But Darren, I think it would be interesting for listeners to hear about the efforts you all have made and how this is coming together. I mean, actually, it's being done with the downtown Richmond group. So talk about local and then more local and then focused into a very specific area of the community. What kind of interest are you seeing and what kind of response are you seeing to this effort?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been a great response within the community. The idea originated with the Downtown Richmond Association. They care deeply about not just downtown, but the city of Richmond and the economic and community vibrance that we have here. And so they had actually approached me to host a debate. Obviously, being a part of the Department of Government, it's our job to help out with local organizations like theirs to get citizen participation, get community engagement going on here in the city of Richmond. And so that's the reason why I reached out to you, John, and the folks at the Richmond Register, and everybody's been great about working together to get this thing going and getting this thing put together. So.
And we can tell people that actually next week's Eastern Standard will be a broadcast of that debate that we are doing. And that's actually occurring on Monday evening. There'll be a YouTube link. Look at the WEKU Facebook page and website and Twitter and so forth for information about how to access that live activity. And again, the Eastern Standard program will be a special show next Thursday and next Sunday.
And I will say, if anybody does have any questions they want to have asked, please send a message or on the Downtown Richmond Association's Facebook page, send them a message or post it on their Facebook page, and we'll try to get to as many questions as we possibly can.
Let me turn back to Emily Beaulieu and Ben Knoll. Okay, we talk about voter participation, and we're talking about around 60% in the presidential election. I would venture that the May 17th primary in Kentucky will have a far smaller voter participation than that. What can you all say about that? Why are the voters less likely to get involved, and or is this the case? It's just my perception, less likely to get involved when it's their own neighborhood, their own community, than when we're talking about global issues such as the presidential race every 4 years.
I guess I could start on that. There's a couple of different reasons for that. One is what we could call voter fatigue. We ask people to vote a whole lot in this country, especially compared to other countries here. Just like you said, we vote in the general election as well as primaries. But then we also have, in some states, they do elections on off-year elections like we do here in Kentucky, and that has a general as well as a primary with it. Sometimes school boards, just depending on the state, do their elections at different times. So we're being asked to vote a whole lot here in the United States. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but we do see that in areas where we're called upon to vote more often, we have less voting overall. People just kind of get tired of it after a while. They're in the presidential election, we have a lot of media, we have a lot of attention. There's a whole lot going on in the environment to get people there, to get them interested in it, and helps them remember to go do it. But during primary elections and during some of these down ballot elections, there's just simply not as many resources to get as much information in the environment to get them as to remind them that it's important to get ready and go that day. I mean, there's a variety of reasons. Those are a couple.
Yeah, I think that's all right. There's some really interesting research to sort of build on that. There's some really interesting research being done out of the University of Pittsburgh by a woman named Victoria Scheinman that looks at the fact that, in fact, when people make a decision to participate in an election, to go vote, they often then seek out additional information. I think when we talk about increasing participation, there's a lot of rhetoric out there that, like, we don't want too many uninformed voters getting in the mix. But increasingly, what research is showing us is that when people do decide to participate, they make it a point to get informed. But as Ben's mentioning, that takes time and effort, and if the media is not sort of putting it in your face all the time, there can be just an additional participation burden because most people who go vote want to be informed when they go do it.
I mean, this presidential election this year, of course, I guess it feels like it's been underway for at least a year with the declaration of candidacies, and then we've got debates that start happening. Didn't debates start happening before the end of the year, before the primaries actually started, which to me seems kind of astounding that the primaries start as early as they do. We talk about voter fatigue. I've spoken to many people who talk about the fact that they're already, you know, disgusted with, upset with, done with this process for the presidential election this year. Is there what are you all seeing about this year's presidential campaign that is continuing or contributing to the voter fatigue? Maybe Darren.
No, I mean, I think one thing is just the constant debates. In the state of Kentucky here, it'll be very interesting to see participation rates in certain areas where, you know, Secretary Clinton is very well known, and the Clinton family is very well known for a long time. In addition to areas that might be a little bit more open-minded to Senator Sanders, and actually seeing that participation go up and that energy, you know, going to the ballot box. But we'll have to see in the state of Kentucky. I don't want to make any predictions on that. So,
one thing I could contribute to this is that there's a lot of talk this particular election cycle about how a particular state or a particular candidate brings in new voters and turnout is higher in the primary than it is compared to other years' primaries. And then they make a prediction on that, say, look at this, we were able to get people to turn out higher in the primary. This will then translate into a general election increase in turnout as well. And that might be the case, but historically, that tends to not be associated very strongly. There's not a very high correlation between turnout at the primary level and turnout at the general election level. So I'd be cautious about reading too much into predictions like that.
Yeah, and another point to add to this, just dealing with the length and intensity of the campaign and what that's going to do to people's sort of attitudes towards the campaign and participation at the end of the day. I think one thing that's interesting in your conversation with Allison Lundgren-Grimes, she mentioned a desire to move toward an early voting system here that a lot of states have adopted. But in fact, there's research that's just out in this most recent issue of the American Journal of Political Science that shows a correlation that the explanation's still not really fleshed out at this point, but a correlation between early voting availability and lower overall turnout. And based on my own research, what I think could be happening there is that when you have a shorter campaign period, a shorter election event, it really serves as a kind of focal point that people can really focus on. They can give it their attention. They can get excited and involved. But the danger as things drag out longer is how to sustain that momentum, how to really keep people's interest, how to maintain that energy to ultimately translate into participation on Election Day.
We want to hear more about Emily Beaulieu and your research on voter fraud and voter perception. But this would be a great time for us to return for the final few moments of the conversation I had with Kentucky Secretary of State Allison Lundergan Grimes. And actually, in this very final minute and a half or so, we spoke about the fact that many states with later primaries find themselves in a much more relevant position during this year's presidential primary process or the nominating process than in recent elections past. And I asked Secretary Grimes, how important is Kentucky's role in this year's elections? And what should Kentuckians do to make sure their voices are being heard during this election cycle?
I would say that folks need to realize that there has been no candidate within either party that has achieved the number of delegate votes needed to obtain a nomination. Kentucky is very much in play. We are privileged to have had folks on both sides of the aisle that are running nationally for president of the United States travel here to the Commonwealth. They're going to continue to be doing that. Our electoral votes very much are in play, and I think folks are watching the popular vote. We have seen, especially a presidential election, go all the way up to the Supreme Court in my lifetime. It's one of the reasons that drew me to wanting to be Kentucky Secretary of State, because I think this is a vital and critical an office that plays a big part in helping to shape our democracy. And folks, their voice can only be heard if they go out and vote. We are just weeks away from our May 17th primary election, where Kentuckians will have a say in electing a Supreme Court justice here for the Kentucky Supreme Court. Kentuckians will have a say in electing state representatives in every county across the Commonwealth, as well as state senators. And yes, there is a presidential election that for the Democrats, the nominee has not yet been chosen for, as well as U.S. Senate races that they can be involved in. We hope they realize how important each of those offices are. And the only way they can have a say is if they get out and vote on May 17th. And importantly, if you have any questions about that process and where you go vote, if you are indeed even registered, govotekentucky.com. That's the resource that you should use. Go online. There are no lines. And with ease and speed, there are answers right at your fingertips.
Kentucky Secretary of State Allison Lundergan Grimes, thank you so much for being with us on Eastern Standard.
Thank you so much, John. Have a great day.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, and our program is an interactive program. And at this point, I want to turn to our listeners as we get ready to take another short break. We'll be back with our guests in a moment. We'd like to have you on the air. We'd like to hear your comments, your opinion. What can we do to increase voter participation? How do you react to folks who say, I don't bother to vote. My vote is just one vote among those millions of votes, and nobody's really paying attention. These things are all fixed. These elections are rigged. It's all about money. It's all about who has the most money, who's actually going to get nominated, and who's actually going to get elected. How do you respond to those allegations or those concerns? 800-621-8890. Write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST. Post on the Facebook page or the WEKU website. Or again, the most efficient way to get in touch with us, pick up the phone and call 800-621-8890 or send an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen. This week's program talking about voter registration, voter participation during this very important election year. And we have with us on the line Ben Knoll, Assistant Professor of Politics at Center College. He's on Skype, actually. Emily Beaulieu is Associate Professor in Comparative Politics at the University of Kentucky. And with us in the studio, Darren Wilson, Assistant Professor in the Department of Government at Eastern Kentucky University. Secretary of State Allison Lundergan Grimes was a recorded interview, although we did have a question sent to her. And I'm just going to read it just for the sake of acknowledging the listener who emailed us the question that he would have posed were Secretary Grimes live. Some of our black friends and colleagues who are Kentucky voters still have raw feelings about your anti-Obama rhetoric, which may equate as anti-black speech from your Senate race against Senator McConnell. What are you doing now to mend your relationship with the black community as our Secretary of State and to build up black participation in voting in general? Thanks for being part of this crucial program. John, thank you for writing that email. Obviously, Secretary Grimes not in a position to respond to that question, but I wanted to acknowledge the fact that that question was posed. I don't know if any of our other guests have any reaction to the question or that was directed at Secretary Grimes. It does bring up a point of how campaigns for one race or campaigns for the nomination can affect the general election months later, years later. And let me ask our guests, Emily Beaulieu, Ben Knoll, Darren Wilson, how do you respond to those questions that I was tossing out before the station break? Folks would say, my vote is just one vote. It doesn't really count. It's all fixed. It's all about money in these races. And is there a way to somehow make it at least feel better to voters that their votes have made a difference?
Well, I think that there's an emotional buy-in that that voters need to have. I mean, I talk to my students, for example, and these are upper division and graduate level students, and some of them feel like, you know, my vote doesn't count. Well, you know, it's a matter of, you know, having your voice heard. You might be one of 1,000 if it's a local race. You could be one of millions if it's a national race. But at the end of the day, though, you still have the ability to express your opinion, express your desire for one candidate or the other, or none of the above. I mean, and so I just encourage my students to go vote, because it is a part of the, it being a part of the process is important, and it is an opportunity and a rare occasion to be able to go and express your opinion about the way that this country or your community is going.
Emily?
Yes, so some of the conversations around questions of election fraud here in the U.S., which I will separate out from questions about the influence of money in politics, because I think those tend to be two separate sort of groups of complaints we hear about. But a lot of the conversation around questions of election fraud really has focused on exactly what you're describing, that the concern at the end of the day is less about will fraud affect election outcomes than it is about if voters think fraud is happening, will they decide to stay away from the polls? And that's been a lot of concern that's motivated Supreme Court decisions on questions of voter ID laws, for example. But what I think we're seeing, it may be a little too soon to say for sure, but I think we are seeing a turning point where most folks are coming to recognize, even though in surveys up through, I would say, 2010, 2012, surveys were showing around 25% of respondents believing that there was election fraud happening in the U.S. Ultimately, at the end of the day, I think we are making headway with just demonstrating that those concerns really aren't based in the reality of what we see happening in terms of actual instances of fraud coming to light, being reported, being prosecuted. Those are really minuscule compared to the number of votes that get cast on the number of places that elections are held. And so, interestingly, recent moves to promote voter identification laws are starting to downplay fraud concerns and are starting to emphasize things like the need for a standardization of procedures and increased fairness in that regard, rather than a focus on election fraud. But there has been a lot of concern that that belief about fraud will be enough to deter voters from turning out. And interestingly, this is starting to rear its head even in the Democratic primary. We just saw in New York that a large number, I believe it's over 100,000 voters in Brooklyn, were not, like, showed up to vote and were not on the rolls. And so there are questions about why did that happen? Was it just a mistake or was it intentional? And we have seen in states where Clinton has performed well, Sanders supporters intimating or sometimes more outright stating that there are concerns about the integrity of the process.
Well, and talking about the integrity of the process, taking it to another level, this whole issue of the primaries, I would say many Republicans, there are people, of course, supporting Donald Trump, saying clearly there's a groundswell, and of the Republican voters, it looks like, you know, all things being equal, it looks like the voters are going for Trump as their nominee. Meanwhile, all this discussion going on about how the Republican Party is going to try to make sure that Trump is not the nominee.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in the Democratic Party, there are issues in terms of the superdelegates for the convention who, and you all can correct me on this, but there are people who can go, they can vote for whomever of the candidates they choose when they get to the convention this summer, whether or not Mr. Sanders, for instance, has a high degree of support. And if you look at the results of the primaries, it seems to be an awful lot of activity, a lot of, you know, Mr. Sanders performing a lot better than a lot of people expected. But is it not true that there's a perception that the party, you know, the mainstream party folks are behind Secretary Clinton, so we're going to end up with Clinton as the nominee? I mean, don't these things cloud that issue and create frustration? And that's one of the reasons the millennials, for instance, are so upset about the Democratic Party and its support for Clinton.
John, I think you're absolutely right about this, and I think this starts to rub up against that second concern about money in politics, because you have heard the rhetoric, slightly different rhetoric, but both from Sanders supporters, who is seen as going after Wall Street, and from Trump supporters who love to tout how he's not bought by anyone. He's financing his own campaign, so he doesn't have to answer to anyone. It is both that issue of kind of who is controlling politics, right? And typically that being associated with a lot of money. But then, yeah, that these parties that are out of touch with large sections of their voting base are sort of pulling the strings to make things happen the way they want rather than actually being responsive to voters.
So, Ben Noel, what can we do to change this?
Well, it's important to remember, too, is that money doesn't always guarantee election victories, right? I mean, just think of this last Republican presidential nomination cycle. Which candidate raised the most money by far? It was Jeb Bush. And how much of an election did that seem to buy, quote unquote, for him? Marco Rubio's raised about as much as Ted Cruz, and yet Ted Cruz has done much, much, much better than Rubio did. So the topic of money in politics is a really complicated one, and it's tough to find evidence that money at all times just controls and dominates the process. I think this election cycle has shown that voters, yes, money can buy advertisements, and it can it can increase mobilization and do lots of things, but at the end of the day, people make up their minds, and we often see candidates win who don't always raise the most money. And sometimes they raise the most money simply because that's the candidate that the most people want, not that they become the candidate the most people want because they have the most money.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. We're talking about voter participation. And we have with us Ben Noel of Center College. We have Emily Beaulieu of University of Kentucky, and Darren Wilson of Eastern Kentucky University. And we now have on the line caller David from Lexington with a question. David, thank you for waiting and being patient with us. Go right ahead with your question.
Yeah, I had a question about the length of the primary. And if it was shortened, do you think there would be less candidates that would run? Or could you possibly see a growth in candidates to the point where there would be so many that there's not enough time to learn about each candidate and make it more difficult for us as voters to decide on one?
A reaction? Any of our,
that's
of
a
our
great,
guests?
It's a great question. I think on the one hand that what we know about candidate entry is that has a lot more to do with the party system and the sort of viability that has less to do with the length of the election cycle. So I'm not sure I would expect to see a different number of candidates. What you might get, though, is different types of candidates who could be viable in a shorter election period without necessarily needing the long sort of institutional ties and network connections that really help with the sort of marathon campaigning we see here.
All right, David, thank you for your call.
No, thank you.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. A few minutes for you to get involved in our conversation about voter participation. 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. If you can type fast, you can send us an email at WEKUEasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST. And at any time, carry on the conversation on Facebook or the WEKU web page. Here's an interesting email from, this is from Cindy Heine of the League of Women Voters. I'm not sure exactly where Cindy is located, but she says, be sure to make it clear that there is no primary election for Republican presidential candidates, but there is a Republican primary for other races, the 6th congressional seat and U.S. Senate, for example. Also remind voters that Governor Bevin won the Republican primary last year by 83 votes. As Cindy says, every vote counts. And I'm really grateful for that example, because I know there have been, and I'm sure many folks have examples of races that have been won by even fewer votes, especially on the local level.
Yeah, actually, there was a great story about actually Massachusetts when they had their Democratic presidential primary, where there was one city, and I can't think off the top of my head which city this is, but it actually went in favor of Senator Sanders by one vote. And he ended up getting the representatives from that particular community going to the state and getting the delegates. And so I thought that was a very interesting story and a good lesson of why you should go vote. And also I would say with regard to local races, the city of Richmond does not have a primary May 17th. So I do want to let people know about that. The candidates go automatically to the general election because there were not enough candidates running for a primary. But we do have state representative. We have other seats that are at the local level that will have primaries.
We talk about, again, something very local like the Richmond City Commission, and there are sure other very local races that are on the ballot May 17th or in November. What do you individually, I'm going to ask each of you, how do you feel we could do a better job of getting information to voters? And thank you, Cindy, from the League of Women Voters for checking in. For however many years has the League of Women Voters been out there printing documents and holding debates and sharing information with people to help motivated voters learn more about the candidates so that, you know, come election morning, people are standing in line at the polls with a piece of document that the League of Women Voters got into their hands. But in 2016, in this 21st century environment, how do we really get this information out to people so that we can go to the polls and not go in there and go, oh, what is this? I have no idea who these people are. I'll just pick one, the name that I like best.
No, I think in the city of Richmond and Madison County specifically, it's very interesting. I mean, over the past 20 years, we've experienced quite a bit of growth. And so we've sort of got moved away from that, you know, quote unquote, good old boy system. And so really, I think, in my opinion, it's actually upon the local parties to go door to door to do the groundwork and make the connections and make the arguments for their candidates, you know, and because, you know, we've experienced so much growth, and there's a lot of people here in Madison County that do not feel like they need to be a part of the process, and they've not been asked to join the process. And so I think it's up to the parties to actually start doing that in a better way.
Emily and Ben.
Well, so Cindy is with the League of Women Voters here in Lexington. And I would say, and just to add to everything you mentioned about what is so great about the League of Women Voters, they actually were the originators of presidential debates here in the U.S. They were the first sponsors of the first presidential debates that were held. And I do think part of why the League of Women Voters has been so successful over the years as a source of information is because it is explicitly nonpartisan. They do have, I believe, 5 issue areas that are things like clean water, child welfare, like things that most people don't tend to find too controversial or objectionable. And so they serve as a really good nonpartisan source of information. And I think one of the really big challenges today is that we're in an era where media are perceived as being if not partisan, then at least polarized or coming with a certain set of biases. So one of the things I have found really interesting is engaging more on social media, particularly Twitter, as a source of sort of alternative information. And I think increasingly, particularly as this generation sort of comes of age and becomes more active voting, engagement with social media is really going to be key.
Ben Knoll, your research, and when you talk to voters about their behavior and participation in the election process, what gets them out there? What gives them the information they need so they can be informed voters?
Speaking of information, I think that there is a lot of information that's available in the environment, especially for federal level elections and the presidential election. I don't think the problem is so much the availability of information as more the motivation of people to proactively go and seek it out. Lots of people do, and they tend to be the ones who are more engaged, more informed, more just interested in politics, and they're the ones who tend to show up on election day and vote. The local level, that's something that we, and I say we as a country, we as a local community, could do better at. Even when I teach political science for a living, this is something I do. I have struggled sometimes to find any information about, say, local elected officials to be able to base a vote on. I think the local candidates could do a better job of having information available, having websites, having social media going, so that the people who are interested would be able to find something when they go look for it.
Ben Knoll is assistant professor of politics at Centre College, focusing on public opinion and voting behavior of the American public. Thank you, Ben, for being with us for this week's Eastern Standard. Emily Beaulieu is associate professor in comparative politics in the Department of Political Science at the University of Kentucky. Emily, thank you. First time on the program, and we're really glad to meet you and have you as a resource. Thanks for being part of the show.
It was a pleasure.
And Darren Wilson with us. Listeners are going to hear next week City Commissioners debate for the City of Richmond on this next week's Eastern Standard here on WEKU. Where can listeners find out more if they want to be able to follow that YouTube link and see the event as it occurs live on Monday evening?
Yeah, there's a great article in the Richmond Register today, and you can find more information on their website as well as the Downtown Richmond Association.
Okay, and we've posted the link to the Richmond Register article to the WEKU Facebook page. Darren Wilson, thank you for being part of the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Eastern Standard is a production of WEKU at Eastern Kentucky University. Our program is an interactive show, so we're interested in hearing from you at any time. Write to us at WEKU Eastern Standard@gmail.com and let us know what you think, your suggestions for topics for programs, your reactions to things that we have done. You can find a podcast of this and every Eastern Standard program when you visit the website at weku.fm, and the show repeats on Sunday evening. Producers for this week's show, Noah Day took the lead and made most of it happen with the assistance of Logan Riley. And we're grateful to all of our student producers who have assisted in putting together this week's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. Thank you for tuning in.